The headlines: Iran says American and European officials and the media they support exploited a tragic incident to incite riots in the country. Hamas calls on the Palestinians to confront Israeli settlers' incursion into Al-Aqsa Mosque. And at least 13 people, including 7 children, are killed after a man opened fire on his former school in central Russia. Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us. My name is Kisumish Ahmadi, and these are our top stories this hour. Iran has denounced the U.S. and European governments for what it calls their hypocritical support for the recent riots in the country. Foreign Ministry spokesman Nasser Kanani says American and European leaders and the media they support exploited the tragic incident of the death of a young woman to incite riots in the country. Kanani said they did their best to back the rioters under the pretext of supporting the rights of Iranians. These governments also ignored rallies by millions of Iranians against the rioters. A spokesman urged Western governments to abandon their false slogans and rather move to end what he called cruel and inhumane sanctions against Iran. Western officials, including those in the U.S., have frequently voiced support for the rioters in recent days.
It's the third time since Friday that Iranians assemble en masse to call the nation for peace. This gathering is in fact a response to days of nationwide street violence and riots that erupted in Iran following the death of Mahsa Amini, a young Iranian woman who died on September 16th, days after she was taken into a police station. The demonstrators here say while they sympathize with Mahsa's death, they don't want the violent protests to go on.
We are too waiting for the investigation to shed light on Mahsa's death. We are all saddened by her death. But unfortunately, some people are committing vandalism in the name of Mahsa. They're desecrating our sanctities in her name.
It's not about Ms. Amini. Those people who have violated law and order have used Mahsa's death as an excuse to incite unrest in our country. They have destroyed public properties and burned our flag, which represents our identity.
Police have rejected claims that Mahsa Amini was mistreated, saying no physical contact happened between officers and Amini. Now, violent protests and acts of vandalism come while Iranian authorities have given assurances that a thorough investigation is underway into her death. Here, people describe the rioters as foreign-backed elements who are exploiting the death of Mahsa Amini to instigate chaos and wreak havoc across the country.
I believe Saudi Arabia, Israel, and the U.S. are trying to use the issue of Mahsa Amini through their media propaganda to sow divisions among Iranians and deal a blow to the Islamic Republic. But they will never achieve their goals because our nation will stay united.
22-year-old Mahsa was an Iranian Kurd from the city of Saqqez in Kurdistan province. On September 13th, she was on a trip to Tehran with her family when she was taken by police. Police have released the CCTV footage showing Mahsa suddenly collapsing on the ground and then later being brought to an ambulance.
People here say they're all grieved for Mahsa's unfortunate fate. Yet they say the issue should not divide Iranians and harm national security. Yusuf Jalil, Tehran.
Hakime Sakaiberia is an assistant professor at the University of Tehran. She says the West is inciting violence in Iran, but its pretext of protecting the rights of Iranians is hypocritical since Western countries have a dark history of human rights.
You know, the Western media outlets have chosen to incite violence inside Iran and, follow the framing of the U.S. government, which is not in line with reality and is hypocritical in the sense that they talk about the human rights of the people in Iran, but they have for years trampled the human rights of the Iranian people by sanctioning Iran, by not allowing medicine come to the country for people in need of that. It is hypocritical of the U.S. government to talk about human rights, not only because it has a dark human rights of its own inside the United States, but also because it has a dark human rights record of instigating violence around the world wherever there are independent countries involved.
A Syrian and social activist says that the United States and an anti-Tehran terror group, MKO, are behind the recent riots in Iran.
And we had the very surprising death of Mahsa Amini on 16th of September, so 3 days after an order was issued from the Mujahideen command in Albania for a revolt, and then we have this explosion. Now, what is going on is that everything is being orchestrated from the United States and CIA. There is an organized attack which is being directed against Iran, and the CIA fosters and keeps many Iranian and other groups to us, pays them money, provides them with the media and others, which they do day and night propaganda against Iran.
Iran has called on the UN nuclear agency to exercise independence and impartiality in monitoring and verifying the country's nuclear program. The head of the Atomic Energy Organization of Iran made the remarks in an address to the 66th IAEA General Conference in Vienna. Mohammad Islami called for an end to baseless allegations against Iran's nuclear program. He stressed that there is no undeclared nuclear activity or material in Iran, and all the accusations against the country are based on false and fabricated Israeli intelligence. On the JCPOA, Islami reiterated that Iran remains committed to the 2015 deal and its remedial measures were in response to the other side's non-compliance to their obligations. He said Iran will only reverse such measures if the illegal sanctions are removed and baseless accusations against its nuclear program are stopped. Iran's President Ebrahim Raisi has emphasized the need to confront the bias of Western media in the fight against terrorism. Raisi made the remarks while meeting with the family members of Lieutenant General Qasem Soleimani, who was assassinated by the U.S. more than 2 years ago. He said the enemies of the Islamic Republic use media to distort the reality. He particularly blasted the mainstream Western media for their attempts to falsify facts by changing the definition of terrorism. The president hailed General Soleimani as one of the symbols of the Islamic establishment. General Soleimani was killed in a U.S. drone strike near Baghdad International Airport in 2020. Lebanese workers and depositors tried to storm the parliament compound on Monday amid the country's economic crisis. A retired military personnel demanded better monthly pay while depositors called on the banks to release their life savings. Samar Msali reports.
The crisis hit Lebanon is once again a scene of angry masses. The parliament is back to meet and debate a new budget. Yet protesters see the budget being discussed as elusive.
Instead of putting together a budget which encourages development in agriculture, industrial production, and all fields in Lebanon, they want to impoverish the people and push them to die in the sea as they immigrate illegally. The government, which relies on debt, is being controlled by a mob, which is the Banks Association and the Central Bank. They should be held accountable for getting billions of dollars out of the country.
Banks reopened partially on Monday following a week-long closure in the wake of a wave of holdups. Depositors stormed at least 7 bank branches in the capital and abroad, demanding their trapped savings.
We know these banks, you know, where we invested our money. But unfortunately, they stole the money between themselves, and they plan, and every time they create a story.
One woman named Saleh Hafiz forced one branch to give her $13,000 of her savings, saying she needed it to pay for her sister's medical treatment. But she didn't take back her money on her own.
They left us no other choice. We encouraged Sally, and we were with her when she held up the bank because it was a humanitarian situation, and we will be with all the people who urgently need their money. Our government is rotten and corrupt, and so is the judicial system.
A former member of parliament tells the government has been procrastinating while time is running out. The governmental institutions, including schools, are almost out of service.
The entire governmental sector is paralyzed. The workers, the military personnel, the ministerial workers, the public teachers, They all have rights and they can barely do their job. There's no health care, no educational assistance. The budget plan the parliament is debating today is unfair.
Lebanon's economic downfall began in October 2019. The Lebanese pound has lost around 90% of its value against the U.S. dollar, but officials have failed to put in place necessary reforms. Maryam Saleh, Beirut.
The Palestinian resistance movement Hamas calls on people in the occupied territories to continue protesting against Israeli attempts to desecrate Al-Aqsa Mosque. In a statement, Hamas slammed Israeli settlers for carrying out Jewish rituals in the mosque compound. Hundreds of settlers backed by Israeli forces have stormed Islam's third holiest site since yesterday. A Zionist group earlier announced plans to increase settlers' visits to Al-Aqsa Mosque this week. This is while all such visits are banned under a 1967 agreement between Israel and Jordan, which is a custodian of the mosque. Last week, a senior Hamas member warned of a major escalation if Zionist incursions into the Al-Aqsa compound continue ahead of the Jewish New Year celebrations on Sunday. We talked to Charlotte Kate from the Palestinian Prisoners Solidarity Network about the Israeli desecration of the Al-Aqsa Mosque. Let's take a listen.
What we're really seeing is an armed colonial attack on one of the holiest sites of the Palestinian people. And so the Palestinian resistance forces, Hamas, Islamic Jihad, the Popular Front, all of the resistance forces have been very much unified in saying that these attacks on Al-Aqsa Mosque must come to an end. And of course, there are Palestinians on the front line in Jerusalem, particularly Palestinian women who really put their bodies and lives on the line on a regular basis to defend Al-Aqsa Mosque against these invasions of these settlers, much as we see the Palestinian resistance doing the same thing in multiple ways. And so, you know, from these women who are standing at Al-Aqsa Mosque to defy the invasions of the settlers to the armed resistance that we see growing throughout the West Bank and, of course, very strong in Gaza, there is one unified position of the Palestinian people to take a stand against this. But unfortunately, the Western countries, like we see the United States, now the UK is announcing that it could potentially move its embassy to occupied Jerusalem. And of course, all of this is actually providing support and sustenance to the most fascist of these armed settler movements attacking and colonizing Palestinian people and Palestinian land.
The UK Prime Minister is considering a controversial move to relocate Britain's embassy from Tel Aviv to Al-Quds. The announcement has already angered Palestinians who have long held Al-Quds as the capital of their future state. Liz Truss, of course, has made no bones about her pro-Israel stance. But why is she putting this potential move at the top of her list is questionable, given that the UK is grappling with so many economic problems at this point in time.
Indications are coming from the UK Prime Minister Liz Truss, who is considering to break with decades-old tradition and move the UK embassy from Tel Aviv to Al-Quds. This move has been strongly criticized by not only Palestinians, but the UN. A number of special rapporteurs have said relocating the British embassy to Al-Quds would break with international law and UN resolutions and reverse decades of British policy.
The capital of Israel. Thank you.
The potential move of the embassy to Al-Quds follows the footsteps of the former U.S. President Donald Trump.
President Trump, by recognizing history, you have made history.
It also led to Palestinians' fierce condemnation, leading to protests and clashes in which Israeli forces killed dozens of Palestinians. Even the former U.K. Prime Minister Theresa May criticized the move at the time. Special Rapporteur focused on Palestine has said, two or more wrongs do not make a right. Acts altering character, status, the demography of Al-Quds have no legal effects and are null and void and must be rescinded. But why would the UK Prime Minister consider such a move when the UK is grappling with a series of crises which are more important for a new Prime Minister, like a cost of living crisis that has gripped the UK, getting worse by the day? Liz Truss has not hidden the fact of her pro-Israeli stance. She has said that under my leadership, Israel will have no stauncher friend in the world. That's what I've done as Foreign Secretary and Trade Secretary. I don't just talk the talk, I walk the walk. She also said that she would further solidify her ties with Israel by signing a free trade deal with Israel. This is interesting since she has rejected that notion with the U.S. at this point in time. Liz Truss has admitted that the U.K. will not strike a post-Brexit free trade deal with the U.S. for a number of years.
The relocation of embassies from Tel Aviv began with former U.S. and Donald Trump. Other countries have followed in Washington's footsteps, including Honduras, Australia, the Czech Republic, Serbia, and Slovakia. Now, these moves do nothing to solve the Palestinian issues. One of the reasons for the embassy relocations has been the so-called normalization of ties between some Arab countries and Israel, another precedent set by Trump.
The controversial consideration by the UK Prime Minister to move UK's embassy from Tel Aviv to Al-Quds may have been put in overdrive when Truss made this promise to Israel during her campaign to become prime minister. During the Tory leadership contest, she addressed this to an influential lobby group called the Conservative Friends of Israel. But who is the Conservative Friends of Israel? It is not that far off to conclude that Truss has promised favors for Israel when it comes to the issue of doing business in exchange for Israeli investment, so that together we can create well-paid, high-value jobs in both countries, as stated by the International Trade Secretary, Anne-Marie Trevelyan.
Now to Russia, where 15 people are killed after a gunman opens fire on students in a school in the western city of the country. Police say that seven of the victims are school children. They say at least 20 others were also wounded in the incident, including a military officer who is in critical condition. An investigating team says that the gunman wore clothes, then committed suicide after the assault. Vladimir Putin has called the incident an act of terrorism. Meanwhile, another shooting incident at a Siberian military establishment in the center has left a recruitment officer wounded. That brings us to the end of this edition of World News. Stay tuned.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
When your horse returns to Alcamp Riderless,
Azoru Sayyidi wa Mawlai wa Mu'tamadi wa Rajai.
The ocean of dua.
Al Imam Al Hussein.
Why did you leave us to fend for ourselves? Hussein, Hussein, the slain.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين ثم الصلاة والسلام على سيدنا ونبينا محمد وآله الطاهرين. In the name of Allah, the most beneficent, the most merciful. I am Sayyid Muhammad Hassan Mudarrisi, and in this edition of The Ocean of Dua, we are trying to discuss and talk about the different aspects of Ziyarat Imam al-Husayn alayhi salam, Ziyarat al-Ashura. So stay with us.
وَلَعَنَ اللَّهُ ابْنَ مَرْجَانَ وَلَعَنَ اللَّهُ عُمَرَ ابْنَ سَعَدٍ وَلَعَنَ اللَّهُ شِمْرًا.
Brothers and sisters, as you were previously with us, we were discussing who Umar ibn Sa'd was when we reached this part of Ziyarat al-Ashura. وَلَعَنَ اللَّهُ عُمَرَ ابْنَ سَعْدٍ. And may Allah distance from his mercy Umar ibn Sa'd. We said that he was really hesitant to accept the responsibility of sending an army against Imam Hussein alayhi salam in that battle. But when he finally accepted that, because of his intoxicating love of the world, even in that time, on the night of Ashura, Imam Hussein alayhi salam tried to invite him to abandon the forces of evil and join his forces to attain salvation. Imam told him that, "Do not fear Allah, leave these people and stay with me." And he responded, "My house will be destroyed." Imam said, "It will be built for you." Umar Sa'd said, "My land will be taken." And Imam says, "I will be giving you the better from that with my wealth." And he does not accept. He continues concocting pretexts until Imam, when Imam knows that there is no room for his change, Imam curses him. This scenario is exactly the same as this verse of the Holy Quran, where it says, إِنَّ الَّذِينَ كَفَرُوا سَوَاءٌ عَلَيْهِمْ أَأَنذَرْتَهُمْ أَمْ لَمْ تُنذِرْهُمْ لَا يُؤْمِنُوا. For the faithless people, it is the same to them whether you warn them or do not warn them. They will not have faith. خَتَمَ اللَّهُ عَلَىٰ قُلُوبِهِمْ وَعَلَىٰ سَمْعِهِمْ وَعَلَىٰ أَبْصَارِهِمْ غِشَاوَةٌ وَلَهُمْ عَذَابٌ عَظِيمٌ. Allah has set a seal on their hearts and their hearing, and there is a blindfold on their sight, and there is a great punishment for them. The Holy Quran exactly explains what the reason is. إِنَّمَا تُنذِرُ مَنِ اتَّبَعَ الذِّكْرِ, the Holy Quran says elsewhere. You can only warn someone who follows the reminder. وَخَشْيَ الرَّحْمَنَ بِالْغَيْبِ, the one who fears all beneficent in secret, these are the ones whom you can warn. فَبَشِّرْهُ بِمَغْفِرَةٍ وَأَجْرٍ كَرِيمٍ, give such people the good news of forgiveness and a noble reward.
When people ask, "I'm confused about which school is right or which madhab is right," go to Karbala. Look at Karbala, it clarifies it instantaneously. Anybody says, "I'm confused," say, "Please go to Karbala and tell me what happened, why it happened, and what does it have to do with your religion." You will see it completely exemplifies. It clarifies, it takes all the blurs out instantaneously. SubhanAllah, that's the miracle of Imam Hussein alayhi salam. Imam Hussein alayhi salam's main foundation of morality is, do not allow tyranny, do not allow evil doing, do not allow indecency. Why is Imam like this? Because he knows Allah, he appreciates him, he understands his dimensions. That's why we must love them so much. We must love them so much that don't let anybody else take us away from them. There should be no room in our thoughts. No matter who we admire in this world, no matter how great a person we look at, never move the Prophet and Ahlul Bayt out of the center of the heart. Never. They will know that their Khalifa lied to them because he told them they don't pray. And if they see them praying on the battlefield, their hearts will change. So stop them from praying. Imagine how evil these people were. That's how much lies they had. And you cannot eradicate this lie at the level that we are talking about unless you give your blood for the love of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala.
This is what happened to Umar ibn Sa'd. And as he finally accepted to battle against Imam Hussein alayhi salam, and he rejected Imam Hussein's invitation on the night of Ashura. And when Imam Hussein had incurred several wounds and lay on the plains of Nineveh, unconscious, it was Umar ibn Sa'd who began encouraging his men to behead Imam alayhi salam. Perhaps this is why some historians reckon him as the one who bashara qatl al-Hussein, as the one who directly killed Imam Hussein alayhi salam. What truly shows his nature is what happens in the aftermath of Imam Hussein alayhi salam's martyrdom. Ibn Athir writes, وَلَمَّا قُتِلَ الْحُسَيْنِ أَمَرَ عُمَرُ بْنُ سَعْدِ نَفَرًا فَرَكَبُوا خُيُولَهُمْ وَأَوْطَأُوا الْحُسَيْنِ. After Imam Hussein alayhi salam was martyred, Umar ibn Sa'd gave orders. He gave orders to a group of people who mounted their horses and trampled the body of Hussein. Dear listeners, this was only a brief story of a person who was defeated in the inner battle, in this jihadun nafs that we used to discuss in the earlier episodes of this year. And this is what happens. As a result of that defeat in the inner battle, he lost the outer battle as well. Due to his love and passion for position, for governorship, he had the audacity of killing the grandson of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wa alihi wasallam, who was the official divine guide of the age. This is not something small. It is difficult for one to understand how a human being can have such audacity of carrying out such a horrendous massacre. History, however, has always repeated itself, and it will repeat itself again, because the laws of history do not change. We have had many people who were hesitant at first, but looking at these material blessings and wealth they are about to achieve, they forget about everything. They forget about who their imam is. And even worse, they try to stand against him. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for staying with us in this episode. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
الذي صنعت من الرمح منبرا ظمآن والزمان بعينيك ممطرا نعم الأمير أنت حسين وقدوتي ساروا إليك قلبي وعقلي ودمعتي يا محيي الكرامة تبكيك كل عين لبيك يا إمامي لبيك يا حسين بالروح بالدم لبيك يا حسين بالروح بالدم لبيك يا حسين
In the limelight.
The Biden administration's wait-and-see stance on Israeli regime's escalated attacks against several prominent Palestinian organizations puts their staff at risk of arbitrary detention and torture. those groups and observers warn. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Maureen Claire Murphy, writer. This article is published under the heading, U.S. gives green light to Israeli regime's attacks on human rights groups. Stay tuned for more. The Biden administration's wait-and-see stance on the Zionist regime's escalated attacks against several prominent Palestinian organizations puts their staff at risk of arbitrary detention and torture, those groups and observers warn. The Zionist regime raided seven organizations in Ramallah area of occupied West Bank last week, shortly after an Israeli regime military commander rejected an appeal lodged by some of the organizations challenging an order designating them as terrorist groups late last year. Tel Aviv claims that the organizations are front groups for the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine, a leftist political party with an armed resistance wing that is outlawed by the fake regime of Israel, the United States regime, and the EU. All seven organizations, including Al-Damir Al-Haq, the Bisson Center for Research and Development, Defense for Children International Palestine, the Union of Palestinian Women's Committees, the Union of Agricultural Work Committees, and the Union of Health Work Committees, were sealed shut and issued orders declaring their groups unlawful. The Zionist regime troops confiscated equipment and, in the case of some of the groups, files from their raided and sealed offices. Defense for Children International Palestine and the Union of Palestinian Women's Committees say the Israeli regime troops seized files containing sensitive information regarding child clients and women receiving psychological support. The targeted groups have been working in Palestine for decades and receive international funding to support their work. That work includes providing legal representation to Palestinians held without charge or trial by the Zionist regime, international human rights advocacy, providing jobs and social services to Palestinian women and farmers, providing health care to rural communities, promoting women's and workers' rights, and representing children who are tried in the Zionist regime military courts. Put more simply, the organizations are either dedicated to challenging Israeli regime impunity or strengthening Palestinian steadfastness and resiliency under the extreme pressures of perpetual military dictatorship. Because they are a point of friction for the occupation, they have been subjected to harassment and smear campaigns by the Zionist regime and its proxies for years, including raids and the arrest and detention of their staff, in a bid to hamper their work and dry up their international funding. Khaled Guzmar, the Director of Defense for Children International Palestine, said during a webinar hosted by Democracy for the Arab World Now, a U.S.-based organization founded by the murdered writer Jamal Khashoggi recently, "In the past, they used to work in order to silence us, and now they're working in order to eliminate us, eliminate our work, and even the organization." Guzmar was summoned by the Shin Bet, the Zionist regime's secret police, for an interview recently following the raids. The officer made clear that he knew detailed information about Guzmar's family members in order to intimidate him. "They haven't faced ever any real accountability," Shaban Jabarin, the director of Al-Haq, said of the Zionist regime during the same webinar. "They failed in the last 15 years to silence us, to push us back, to get us down and dry our resources, he said, leaving the Zionist regime with the final tactic to declare them as terrorist organization. They are not ready to accept this. They challenge them to prove what they say. Like Osmar, someone claiming to be an agent with the Shin Bet, the Zionist regime's secret police called Jabarin recently and summoned him to a nearby military base. Jabarin, who said that phone call was of a threatening nature, refused to comply. He added, "If they have a problem with Shawan Jabarin, the only thing I ask for is due process and a fair trial. Let them take me today," he said, pledging to continue his organization's human rights work despite the personal threats. "If there is one person who should be behind bars," Jabarin said, "it's Mr. Gantz and his commanders, those who are responsible for committing war crimes in the occupied territory, including Gaza, East Al-Quds, and the West Bank." Jabarin was referring to Benny Gantz, the Zionist regime's war minister, who issued the terror designations against Al-Haq and other groups. Benny Gantz, the Zionist regime's war minister, is a person of interest in the International Criminal Court's investigation into war crimes in the West Bank and Gaza, which was opened last year. The United States and the Israeli regime, as well as many of Tel Aviv's European allies, some of whom fund the organizations targeted by Gantz, opposed the ICC's investigation in Palestine. Three of the targeted groups, including Al-Haq Ad-Damir and Defense for Children International Palestine, have provided evidence for the ICC investigation. During his visit to Al-Quds last month, Joe Biden pledged to shield the Zionist regime from accountability, including at the UN and International Criminal Court. Earlier this week, The Guardian reported that a classified CIA report shows the agency was unable to find any evidence to support the Zionist regime's decision to designate the Palestinian groups as terrorist organizations. The U.S. agency received intelligence from the Israeli regime regarding the designations, but like multiple European countries, did not find any evidence to support the claim, The Guardian reported, citing two sources familiar with the study. Despite not buying the Zionist regime's claims, Washington has so far refused to publicly challenge the Israeli regime over designations and other measures taken against the Palestinian groups. The U.S. State Department spokesperson Ned Price said this week that we continue to seek additional information from our Israeli partners. He added that we remain concerned about the impacts of the closure of the offices of these Palestinian NGOs in and around Ramallah, and we've made clear to our Israeli and to our Palestinian counterparts that independent civil society organizations in the West Bank must be able to continue their important work, he said. But when asked why the U.S. wouldn't forthrightly condemn the Israeli regime's actions, Price said, "The Israelis have told us that they have information in their possession that would justify taking action against the groups." Price was admitting that the United States is giving the Israeli regime indefinite time to retroactively justify the designations, potentially putting the organization's staff and wider networks at risk of arbitrary detention and torture. "I found the most troubling element of the U.S. response to what happened last week to be the statement about waiting for more evidence," Laura Friedman of the Foundation for Middle East Peace said during the Dawn webinar, adding, "Because waiting for more evidence is not a passive statement, it is an active green light and encouragement for Israel to crack down further on these groups in order to try to manufacture more circumstantial evidence." Friedman pointed to the discredited secret dossier on the groups that was given by the Zionist regime to European diplomats in May 2021 and supposedly contained information that justified the terror organizations. Friedman said that dossier consisted virtually entirely of evidence in the form of statements made by Palestinians under interrogation after they had been arrested by Israelis for similar charges. This is coercive interrogation on top of an already coercive military court system that leaves Palestinians with no due process. In another recent event, Friedman noted that the Zionist regime operates a plea bargain factory in its military courts. Joanna Rishmavi, a Spanish aid worker in her 60s, took a plea deal that saw her sentenced to 13 months in prison for her work with the health work committees, which was declared illegal by the fake regime of Israel in early 2020. The health work committees was not informed of the designation until the Zionist regime began an escalated campaign against it, arresting its director, Sata Odeh, and closing its headquarters in Ramallah, the seat of Palestinian Authority in the West Bank. Friedman told the Dawn webinar, what Rishmavi pled guilty to effectively was unknowingly providing aid to an organization that Israel defines as a terrorist group. The Zionist regime held up Rishmavi's plea agreement made in a highly coercive context in which Rishmavi had no hope of actual justice as proof against the targeted organizations. 24 independent UN experts condemned the Zionist regime's escalating attacks on the Palestinian groups and urged the 5 permanent members of the UN Security Council, which includes the US, to protect the Palestinian organizations and staff whose offices were raided and closed. The experts also called on the EU and its member states in particular to use their leverage to stop these aggressive attacks. So far, European diplomats have only managed to muster up photo ops and toothless statements of concern, even though the European Union is implicated in the designations. Even Zionist groups such as Americans for Peace Now, J Street, and the New Israel Fund are urging Antony Blinken, the U.S. Secretary of State, to address Israel's persecution of Palestinian civil society, challenging the complicity of the U.S. regime, which subsidizes the Zionist regime's military occupation and provides Tel Aviv with missiles used to bomb residential towers in Gaza, and shields the Zionist regime from accountability through its veto at the UN Security Council remains key. It would only take one phone call from Secretary Blinken, Al-Haq's Susan Power said, adding, just one phone call.
Is there any other way to get familiar with Islam besides mainstream media? Try IRIB English Radio. Thank you. log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, Principles of Friendship. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome everyone. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. I'm your host, Hussein Hinzano, and in today's lesson, we are going to talk about principles of friendship. Friendship, as we know, is a very important part of life of any human being in life, because no matter, every human being lives in this world, definitely grows up with his family, with his father and his mother around, with his sister and his brother around. But you see, with time, he got to connect himself, he got to have connections between him and other people that are not from his family. And those are the friends, those are the people that he needs to connect to. Those are the people that he needs to be with. For example, a friend is anyone that he could meet in a school, you know, in the area where he's studying. He could meet in a shop, he could meet in the places where he's going to play every time. Every time a child goes out, definitely he or she is meeting with other people or other children from the other families. So from there, the friendship grows. So friendship, in this case, is a very important thing in someone's life, because there's no way a someone can live in this world without having a friend in life. He needs a friend. He needs someone he could talk to every time. He needs someone he could play with. He needs someone he can talk with. He needs someone he can share his thoughts with. So with such need, with this much need in our lives, we definitely gonna have to look at the principles of such connection, because it's a connection. If it doesn't have the right amount of principles, if it's not conducted in the right way, definitely it's going to bring more harm than good. So we need principles to look at. We need guidance. Someone needs to be guided on how to be with his friends or her friends, and how he can, you know, bring out good in that particular relationship. So it's something we need to look at. It's something we need to be careful of.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.com.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Welcome back, everyone. You're listening to A to Z program from the IRB English Radio. And in today's topic, in today's program, we're talking about the principles of friendship. We've been talking about how important it is for someone to have a friend in life, and that it's a necessity for anyone to have a friend, someone he can talk to, someone he can share his thoughts with, someone they can sit down and talk with each other and share the thoughts and share jokes and everything. So a friend is someone you need in life that you must share with that's not from your own family, that's not from your blood, that's not from your father or your mother. Because in that case, you'll need to have that particular person you're meeting with in your workplace, in anywhere you're going, in your business area maybe. You will definitely meet people from the other side of the world that you will become friends together. Now, what are the principles that we need to look at during this particular relationship of two people? Now, in general, we will talk about a few principles, but the main thing is for us to check on how we can be successful friends, for the people that we are friends to. You know, if I am your friend, how can I be a successful one? How can I make myself successful? How can this relationship between me and you be a successful relationship? Now, relations with others is definitely among the most important social art. And most of the people neglect this part of relation. Thus, you know, they fail in gaining friends and their relationship with others. Now, their relationship with others will be turned into problems and conflicts. This is because they lack, you know, the knowledge of seeking friends and how to deal with them and the principles of friendship. So indeed, the psychological studies and the day-to-day experiences, as well as the guidance of the Holy Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam and his holy progeny, the 12 Imams alayhi wasallam, decorates us with guidance and ways of seeking friends and how to associate with them. So these are the principles that we are bringing in life in this particular relationship are supposed to be based according to the teachings of the Prophet Muhammad and his holy progeny. We need to look at how they used to deal with their friends. What did they say about friendship? What did they say about about making up a good friendship? And from these particular teachings, we'll come up with the best principles of how we can improve our friendship. Thank you so much for listening. Until next episode, inshallah. Fi amanillah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Just listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1920 to 2020 UTC on the following frequencies. 31 meters, 9,855 kilohertz for Europe, and 31 meters, 9,835 kilohertz for Southern Africa. And FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or BAT 5, and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.